Download the TuneIn app and take 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go. Listen anywhere. KUJZ Creswell, Eugene, Springfield, a Cumulus station.
And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
What'd I win?
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Yo! Welcome to the midweek edition of this particular program. Crunch time and sports talk. What do we have on tap today? Joey Mack will join us smack dab in the middle of the program about 4:30. And we can talk a little football, certainly we can talk some men's basketball. Baseball season starts on Friday. Woo!
Say the thing, Steve.
What?
Say the thing, Steve. The thing you always say when you talk about baseball.
You got me on this one.
It's baseball, Jerry. Oh. Baseball.
Too easy.
Tannenism.
Come on.
Pitchers and catchers have reported. If I don't say it, it doesn't count.
One and two.
People need to make way more of a big deal over this Mel Tucker leaving one job for another, because that has never happened in major college sports. Never has a coach been like, I'm very happy here. I'm not really thinking about another job. And the next day, see Willie Taggart, had a completely different job. So whatevs. Give you my thoughts on that. Oregon, the football program, ISO, in search of a new cornerback coach with Dante Williams. Now taking a gig with USC, there was an article about the gap in revenue between this conference now and the SEC and the Big Ten. And one of the reasons that Mel Tucker is now in East Lansing, or as some of you Michigan fans so affectionately call it, East Landfill, is they pursued him. He was like, nah. And they were like, well, how about if we more than double your salary? He's like, yeah. It's like Raymond, yeah, 82. Boulder to East Lansing, I don't know. I've never been to either place. I hear Boulder is lovely. Can't really interject on East Lansing. To get me to move from a place like this, they'd probably have to, to another small town. Getting East Lansing is a dumpster fire. Wow. On a text line. Can it be put out?
I think that's the thing with dumpster fires, is they can't. Even though one of the hardest times I've ever laughed on this show was when you or Alex explained to me that firemen really enjoy dumpster fires because they are the easiest fires. Yeah, they're the easiest fires to put out. And it was something I'd never considered before, and I just broke down into tears. I couldn't handle it. Based on a Google image search of East Lansing, I would say that is at best a parallel move from Boulder to East Lansing. I've been to Boulder a couple times. It's beautiful there. I'm not getting that vibe from the Google image search of East Lansing.
Yeah, at least with Boulder, you get a sense of the majesty of the landscape in the mountains with skiing. And, you know, you want to break out in, beautiful for spacious skies. I'm just, if I were a betting man, which occasionally, I'm imagining for the aesthetics, East Lansing probably Not cutting the mustard.
It's not even close. You can do the Google search yourself. You'll find out it's Boulder all the way. This is a huge step down for Mel Tucker. Kind of a big mistake. Although I think I would live in very boring East Lansing dumpster fire town
to make
$5.7 million. Yeah, I would do that.
Yeah, how about the former Cowboy receiver Drew Pearson? He called Tucker a con man. Because he recruited his grandson, like, as of this week. And has there been a gray reaction to Tucker leaving? Or is it he's the worst person that's ever walked the face of the earth? Or, duh, you wouldn't do the same thing? And I haven't noticed much of this. Colorado fans in an uproar rather than a small handful who just don't like getting jilted. Because I know he's had a lot of success as an assistant, but, and of course, it's never going to be appealing when someone says, on his I'm staying tweet, he went a little hashtag crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, basically. I don't know if anybody could exactly match Taggart being offended at the question of why wouldn't I be. First of all, I get into this with some people. If I ask them a question and they hit me with a question, I'm like, you do realize a question warrants an answer, not another question. Because I could just ask stupid questions all day. So,
yeah, you can.
When Taggart, I think it was December 2nd, 2017. Why wouldn't I be Oregon coach? After somebody says, are you going to be Oregon coach? It's like, no, that's yes or no. We're not thrilled with your retort. And the answer was, because your agent is in Tallahassee right now and they're making copies of the paper and you're going to be able to do like a fax signature and you'll be out of here so fast. You'll make Malin Sweet's doors spin.
What is the right way to handle that? Because you brought it up on Twitter. Nick Saban did the same thing when he was at the Miami Dolphins. So, no, I'm not going to be Alabama's new head coach.
Well, the best thing he said is, I guess I should address this. No, I'm not going to be Alabama coach.
Right. Okay. So those are the words he said. Willie Taggart was basically the same. Yeah, why wouldn't I be? And then Mel Tucker with just a hashtag-laden tweet. I'm not leaving. Thank you for the interest, Michigan State. But I'm staying. What is the way to go about that? Like, how do you say, yes, I've had an interview?
I'll tell you what, the answer is, and it'll never happen. What do we always say about free agents in front of the podium? Don't tell us you're looking to be with a winner. Tell us you care about who's going to pay you the most money.
Yeah, that's true.
Just like, you want to know the truth? I've been an assistant making pretty good money. If somebody offers me $5 million a year, I'm going to consider it. I mean, the hush over that room, but then how could you rip into the guy?
Right.
It would be like, well, I'm just trying to paint an example.
Even then, the outrage would be tremendous because people would be saying, calling him a snake. How dare you? If it's always about the money, like, you know, why don't you do something about the kids that came here and they should be allowed to leave because this coach doesn't actually care about the program, blah, 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 blah. Like, what is the athletic director doing? How could he not have known that so-and-so was just in it for the money? Why doesn't anybody care about our program? Like, it feels like when a coach leaves, there's always going to be a negative reaction.
Well, there's the two situations where we can tie directly to Oregon and Michigan State, the one that's current and the one that we could relate to. When Rob Mullins hired Willie Taggart, was there any chance you could have seen Jimbo Fisher leaving Florida State for Texas A&M? Because there was no way. He had relatively recently, first of all, Texas A&M isn't a step up except for the money.
Right. Yep.
And knowing that Tucker had his coaching career started under Saban at Michigan State, the athletic director there, could he have foreseen, well, at the end, when the year ended, were you like, well, that's probably it for D'Antoni at Michigan State? So there's no way of foreseeing any of that. each of those coaches going home, that job didn't seem like it was going to be available for years.
That was the one thing that got me, was apparently D'Antonio told the athletic director, hey, I'm going to coach for one more year, but I want to name my successor when I do it. Kind of the Bob Stoops thing where very
Lincoln
suddenly
Riley.
Retires. And then Lincoln Riley takes over. I guess D'Antonio wanted to do the same thing, and Michigan State, rather than agreeing with whoever D'Antonio was going to name, started like a long-term coaching search. D'Antonio found out about this, also the possible like recruiting violations that were coming, and then he just up and retired. He got mad that they were going to look to somebody to replace him other than the person he was going to pick, and he's just like, fine, go pick your person, then I'm going to leave now. Also, I get my $5 million today. Thank you.
And by the way, the Buffs have, within the last half hour, named Darren Cheverini their interim head coach. So there you go. He's been on staff for 4 seasons. He bridged the gap. Rick George is the name of the athletic director, who, by the way...
Two first names?
He sucked it up and said all of the right things, because I think there's a realization, and with the expanded use of the transfer portal, what do you always hear when people start whining about, well, he was going to be the backup and he's leaving now, and fans start whizzing and moaning about him, and it's like, yeah, but if the coach decided to leave, would you have the same problem? And the bottom line is, the player and coach don't really care what you think. I think that's become really, really apparent. And I guess when you, it's such a cliche now when you look at the culture. I mean, you wonder what the heck Graves and some of the Duck coaches and Cristobal are doing, because for Troy Dye, Herbert both decided to come back. The quartet who held that in unison press conference, yeah. Sabrina came back. You wonder if somebody like Satu Sabali is going to decide to come back, because they're really enjoying the heck out of the experience here. And who's kidding who? Winning really helps. When Dye and Herbert came back, they weren't hoping to make a bowl. They knew they were going to be the favorite in the North and be in a Rose Bowl picture.
Oregon State and UW Twitter will tell you that it's Phil Knight personally paying all of those athletes to come back. But yeah, the winning definitely doesn't play a part in that at all. It's just Phil Knight's paycheck.
The fans who default to big boosters, because as everyone knows, the University of Oregon is the only school in the history of collegiate athletics that raises money and had, I mean, the guy at Oklahoma State, what does he have named after him? Oh, a stadium. T. Boone Pickens. I mean, Stanford, Michigan. I mean, these are international schools that have student bodies that back it up and contribute to it. The name, sure. If you went around the college sports landscape, more people will recognize Phil Knight, who, by the way, has also made major contributions to Oregon State and Stanford. But I thought we decided like 35, 38 years ago that you really can't just solve all your problems in life and politics and sports by throwing money at it. Or the Yankees would have had every World Series title from the minute Steinbrenner bought them from 1973 through and including the late 90s.
They did, though.
Not really. They did not through the entirety of the 80s.
They made up for it eventually.
Because of they drafted well, and they built a farm system and made smart decisions and hired the right manager. Look at the Angels.
Yeah, that's
how much money had they spent and got nothing?
Well, the problem with the Angels is they've spent all of their money on Mike Trout, and then everybody knows they need pitching.
First Pujols.
Yes, that's true. But that kind of paid off in that a lot of people then showed up to buy tickets to
watch
him.
But they didn't win anything.
Milestone check. Yeah,
you're proving my point.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. They made the playoffs that one time.
That's what I, and that's kind of my point. This whole money equals victory. I mean, as great as Duke is, they don't win every year. Neither is Kentucky, because it's really hard to have one more than one champion in the same sport. But so this guy, Cheverini, is, I when they say he's the interim coach in February, does that mean he's going to lead him through spring and they're going to try and find a more permanent head coach heading into the 2020 season? And hell, I remember when he was a receiver on the team. And then he returned, who's their coach? Mike McIntyre. And he was one of the guys who was retained. And he was honored by, I don't know if it was Rivals or 24/7, after this latest round of recruiting, I think as one of the top 25 recruiters in the country. Yeah, there it goes. Rivals.com said earlier this week he was named a top 25 recruiter for the third year in a row.
It's important.
So, yeah, the whole Mel Tucker thing, I actually thought he was going to lay down some roots, because, first of all, there's no way around the look, be it Taggart or Saban or Tucker. It's a horrible look. I mean, you're on tape, audio, video. I'm not going anywhere. I love it here. You're at like a boosters event, and you're at that very moment trying to convince young people, oh, you should play here. Boulder's a special place. We're upgrading. What? The deal's done? Yeah, I'm out of here.
So would it almost be better to burn bridges? Because I'm trying to think, like...
Yeah, he ain't going back to Colorado.
Well, right, but, like, I'm trying to think there's really not a middle... Like, you can't just, like, you know, sit on the fence when you're a coach that's being interviewed by another college to take their job. And, you know, whatever the interview process was, maybe he thought it was over with on February 8th when he tweeted his tweet with 19,000 hashtags in it. Like, maybe he thought they weren't...
I think he did think that.
They weren't coming back at him. And then,
did
they talk to a different coach, or did they, you know, look under the couch cushions and find an extra $3 million to hand to him? Like, it doesn't make any sense as to how you go from, I'm definitely staying now because the interview process is over. Thank you, Michigan State. I feel very humbled to. Thank you, Michigan State. I will take your $5.7 million.
Do we know what the original offer was versus what he accepted? I mean, did they jack it up by $2 million a year over 4 years, another $8 million? Because that literally is a case of, you think you're loyal? Well, we're going to prove you're not. And in a lot of ways, with a lot of commas and zeros and tax brackets. So from Saban saying, I guess I have to say it, I'm not going to be the Alabama coach, to memory serves correctly, I think Saban's the Alabama coach. And I wouldn't begrudge a coach following their heart, heading home, making a boatload more money. You know, just like I think players can jam up the transfer portal to better their situation. But the coaches who are of the mindset and have talked to their agent and really, really in their heart believe, yeah, I'm going to be on a plane tomorrow and out of here and still paying the lip service, it's just never going to go over well. And Nick, you asked the right question, is there a right way? I don't think so.
Because obviously, like,
you're gonna tick off some people.
Well, right, because you either you come out and just say, I'm in it for the money, then actually Michigan State fans wouldn't like you because they're like, oh, you don't care about a program, you're just here for the paycheck, why should we think that you're actually going to put time and effort in to make Michigan State better so they can finish third in the Legends division or whatever instead of fourth? And then, you know, you start telling all these lies, no, I love Boulder, I want to stay at Colorado forever, and then you leave, you piss them off too. So, I don't, maybe just never get into head coach. As much as we talk about when you get fired and you get that buyout and you're set for life and you're getting paid to not work and not coach and how great that life would be, man, you're going to upset some people. I don't think I could upset people. I think I'm too nice. Then I get the $5 million and like,
say,
oh, I'll be mean again.
Yeah. At our level, give me a six-figure offer and see how nice we are. But if you're a Colorado supporter, are you more insulted or angry? Because let's not get nuts. They went 5-7, and they lost 6-8 to blow a bowl game. They had 3 Pac-12 wins, which since they joined the league in 2011 is their second best showing. And you just got a head coach in Michigan State. I mean, how fast did the Florida State people turn on Taggart when they were absolutely ecstatic they got him coming back home? So Tucker has been a head coach for a year in college where he went 5-7. He was an interim coach in the NFL after Jacksonville fired Jack Del Rio and went 2-3. And by the way, look at the wins this year. It's not like it was earth-shattering and just a matter of time. He beat Nebraska. That's always a feather in the cap for Colorado, except Nebraska was 5-7. Hey, they beat Arizona State, which, you know, that was the team that ended up knocking off the Pac-12 champs. But Arizona State also had a moment. They went 4-5 in the Pac-12. They beat Stanford, the worst Stanford team we've seen since Harbaugh's first year. And, you know, they beat Washington. And the bottom line is, did everybody remember the Huskies went 4-5 in a Pac-12 that's viewed as down? So, like I said, they lost 6-8, Colorado did, to fail to qualify for a bowl. And Michigan State decided he's going to be their guy. And like I said, I thought Tucker had him headed in the right direction because Colorado has been a garbage Pac-12 football program. I mentioned they had that fluke year in 2016 when they went 8-1. Aside from that, they had never won more than 2 conference games in any year until this year where they just exploded all the way to 3.
So it looks like Colorado initially had Tucker on their radar. They were trying to interview him or be a part of the interview process once D'Antonio stepped down on the 4th. Luke Fickle of Cincinnati came to East Lansing, turned the job down. That's when Michigan State went back to Mel Tucker to try and get him. And obviously somewhere in there, I'm guessing a bank robber left a bag of $2 million on East
Lansing. Like an old school bank bag with the dollar sign on it?
Just the guy was robbing a bank.
I still want one of those.
Yeah, $100 bills were flying out of the back of the car. Like that guy in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Robs the bank and all the money's flying out of the back of the car.
You lost some of your folding money. Babyface Nelson.
Yes, that's it.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. You could also hit us up via the text line, 321-0824, on Twitter at 953 the score for the station. For yours truly at Sports Talk 953. Let's give Nick's as well at Rick Nodgers. Otherwise, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll have an update and more crunch time. 95.3, the score.
Crunch time on 95.3, the score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
It was just quiet. I think everybody was just kind of catching their breath, wrapping around. I'm relieved to know that Jay is okay. I don't think it's any different than if it happened in an office with everybody around. This time it happened in an arena during a game. There's a lot of different thoughts and stuff that run through your head and a concerned group of family, which is what, you know, teams are.
Yo. Welcome you back. That is Chris Kerber, the St. Louis Blues play-by-play man. Man, their veteran defenseman last night, Jay Bouwmeester, comes off the ice after a shift, and he just collapses. And thankfully, the level of instant recognition and, you know, you see something like that and, you know, you realize that at events and whether you go to high school games, you always see the EMS people, the EMS truck. But they got him stabilized. And I was reading about the NHL, their emergency medical standards as we welcome you back. Crunch Time 95.3, The Score. I mean, you expect it for every sport. You know, you've got guys running around and, you know, putting pressure on their heart and things like that. But in particular, you know, collision contact-oriented sports, you've got to be prepared. So there must be two doctors in attendance for every game, one within 50 feet of each bench. They need to have a defibrillator there, a triage room, ambulances. And, I mean, when he was out on his shift, I think he was out there. First of all, it was in the first half of the first period. It was like inside the 8-minute mark. He had taken a 1-minute and 20-second shift. No, it, you know, they went back and look at it. You know, you would think, well, did he get a big hit to the chest or take some kind of, you know, rock your world collision or check? And it was nothing. But his teammate, Vince Dunn, just started screaming and yelling and waving. And, you know, to the credit of both teams, they were like, yeah, there's something bigger than this. And they canceled the game. Jeez, that was scary.
Video was horrifying, too, because it like they just happened to catch it as he was in the bench. Like, they had a player skating by, and they really slowed it down. And it's just, you see him reaching for a bottle of water, and then he just, he just drops.
No.
Oh, it was horrifying. Man.
I don't know that I've ever seen anything like that in hockey. I mean, hey, you see some gruesome things, whether it's a big hit or a cheap shot, put a guy down and a guy get knocked out. You go back to Dale Hunter and Pierre Turgeon, Caps Islanders in 93. The Clint Malarchuk, who got his throat slit by a skate, the Washington Capitol goalie. And, you know, some of the Stevie Moore, the cheap shot that ended up in a legal battle. But for there, it's just like, and especially, I mean, you know, you've got some big offensive linemen, some baseball players that aren't the greatest athletes in the world. But go out and skate a shift in the NHL. I mean, these guys got as good as cardio, and you would think we're in as good a shape as, you know, any of the high-level athletes that we see. And to all of a sudden see a guy go down like that, it's like, whoa, that's some scary stuff. And knock on wood, he's stable and he's okay right now.
Yeah, it just, you think with guys flying around that fast with that much of a collision sport with the sharpened steel on the bottom of their feet, and, you know, they're playing, most guys, like, have the visors now, but hockey players, like, didn't play with that for a long time. Like, you joke about, oh, he took a puck to the mouth, lost 47 teeth, he didn't miss a shift or whatever. Like, that's the kind of, like, gruesomeness you expect, but for a guy who's played hockey for as long as Bomeister has, and he just, like...
Yeah, he's 36, 37.
Yeah, he's played in the NHL a really long time. Like, he's easily got over 1,000 games. Like, you just kind of don't expect that to happen to a guy, just to anybody.
Of the many injuries you see in sports, something like that, a guy just collapsing. Heck, I mean, it's barely visible, but in my lifetime, he was playing for the Lions against, I think it was the Bears, in 1970, and... The film is barely, I mean, Chuck Hughes was running downfield, had a heart attack, and died.
Jesus.
Totally out of nowhere, and just, you know, makes you take a moment to pause, to say the least.
Yeah, like, you don't, like, as violent as football is, where you see all of the, you know, you'll see a guy, like, walking around kind of wobbly if he takes a big hit to the head, or the gruesomeness of watching a knee bend the wrong way, like, that's really gross, but it's not somebody who's on the sideline, came out after a play,
and,
you know, just fell over. Like, they were done doing the violent part, like, on the benches where you're supposed to feel kind of safe in this game, and from not having anything bad happen to you.
Actually, if you consider the high level that you watch, you know, you have 120 FBS football teams in action on a weekend, and all 32 NFL games, and you'll go through an entire weekend and you won't have that moment where they have to bring out the cart and take somebody away. And then you watch the game and you're like, how does that not happen 10 times in every game?
Right.
It's absolutely astonishing. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you want to jump on in. A few other things I wanted to get to today from the NBA. Somebody asked if I saw the Blazer game last night, and it was a matter of because it started early. By the time there would have been reason to tune in, there was no reason to tune in because and by the way, is everybody calmed down now on the Damian Lillard for MVP talk over five games for a team that's now five games under 500?
Ramp it up, baby. And
couldn't guard my lunch, gave up 138 points, 75 in the second half last night. And how about Zion? He played 28 minutes. He scored 31 points. He had 9 rebounds, 5 assists. Just dude is an absolute force. And I would say don't look now, but you're a fan. That's kind of what you do. Right now, they're a game and a half ahead of the Pelicans, who are behind them in 10th. So this whole, well, he's going to lead them on a run, and, you know, you look at another productive inside game for Whiteside, 17 points, 14 rebounds. But the problem with the Blazers is they're just going to have nights when their defense goes into a deep comatose state because they're not a good defensive team. Whiteside is, McCollum and Lillard are not good defenders. Ariza was supposed to be an upgrade. You know, before everybody gets a little too carried away about Gary Trent Jr., he's had a couple of nice games. You know, the Hood injury stinks, and obviously, you know, there's no timetable set for Nurkic to come back, as is there not for Collins to return at this point. So while I thought it was wise that they stood pat at the trade deadline just to see how the entirety of the season plays out, and you got to get to a point where you're a lot more concerned about 2021 than you are 1920, it's just, you know, reality has a tendency to kind of knock on your door or tap you on the shoulder.
Were the Blazers playing in 1920? I don't think they were.
Very funny. Oh, you're a funny kid when you do back in Boys Town. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, see, that's a beautiful thing. We're getting pictures from spring training now. Yeah, I me likey. It gives me hope. All right, to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline we go, bring in Josh. Josh, good afternoon. What's going on?
Hey, Steve, you cut me to the core making jabs about the Blazers like that. Damian Lillard, in my opinion, I mean, he's probably not, wouldn't get MVP, but I think as far as a player that's valuable to his team, him and Giannis, you take them off their respective teams, Milwaukee is not nearly as good as they are, and Portland's not even fighting for a playoff spot. It's not even close. They're probably one of the worst teams in the league. You take Damian off that team with all the injuries and stuff. So I just think you got to give him a lot of credit for keeping him in there, especially with the roster changes and the injuries all year.
No, I mean, I'm a big Lillard fan, but I think some of you got a little carried away with the MVP talk over a great 5-6 game run. Just history says it's nobody's going to be looking at that.
Well, you know, I mean, you got to give us something. We haven't had much to hang on to. So. There's that.
Wow.
But I'll tell you one thing. I got to quit betting on these stupid Lillard parlays. I did this a few times, and he'd have these games where he goes off, and then I'll bet some parlay on over-under points, and I'll lose. And then last night I bet that he would have more threes than Zion would have dunks, and he didn't have a single three last night. So I lost that one.
I didn't get. Oh, that's an interesting one. So how many? What was? Oh, it's just a straight bet. Who's got more? Because
yeah,
I didn't,
it was just a straight bet.
And how
I
many?
Thought it would be a fun one, but I thought it would be a shoe-in because he's been hitting 6, 7, 8 threes a game.
And how many dunks did Williamson have?
3. And Lillard didn't have a single 3.
Wow. So, and you know what the scary thing is? If before the game they would have said over-under on 3 is 3.5, you probably would have wanted to bet more.
Yeah, for sure. I just got to learn not to bet. I think I'm bad luck that way. I just stay away from it. So.
Thanks a lot, Josh.
Take care.
Yeah, by the way, the there would have been another safe bet. Over-under on Damian Lillard field goals in the game, 6.5. how much are you reaching into your 401k to bet the heck out of that? You'd have lost. He had six buckets.
I'd have put my parents' house down on that one for sure.
Oh, don't you need a cosigner?
Kind of.
Or
do you know how? I mean, I guess I have an extra room in my apartment. They could come live with me. It would be awkward considering I was the one that made them homeless in the first place. But we just blame Damian Lillard for that, really. Not my fault.
And you're from a younger generation where when it came to report cards and things like that, you know, you didn't have to take them home and have them signed. Because
some of them.
Oh,
there,
really?
There were some progress report cards for certain classes. I think it was mostly honors classes where it's like every 2 months or so, it's like, hey, here's your grades. We're about to hit, you know, midterm, something like that. You know, hey, let's have your parents look back and look over your report card to see how you're doing. And there were some times I was struggling in English or math, and I was kind of like, hey, don't think I really want my parents to look at this because I'm not doing too well and I won't feel too good about it.
Well,
so it's still part of that.
I fortunately was not a troublemaker in high school. I picked up on that in college. But I knew some guys who first day they had a legitimate absence or needed to get a note from home, would just have a girlfriend or somebody write it. And that would be the handwriting that would be on file in the school for the rest of the year. And a couple times I was like, I think I might be a little jealous, but... I was always able to sidestep the kind of real problem where mom and dad had to basically sign you out of high school jail.
I thought it would get better in high school when everything was digital because I was like,
Well, that's what I was assuming.
Well, it didn't really happen until like my maybe sophomore, junior year of high school or something. But like I thought, okay, it'll be better. Now I don't have to give it to them. I can just say, oh, I looked. It was a da-da-da and I'll lie and get away with it. And, you know, I'll work harder on the next test and it'll be okay. But then they would look at it when I wasn't home or like if I was out at a sporting, like if I was out at a game with my dad, my mom would check my grades and then I would come home and my mom would be mad at me about my grades. I'm like, there's no winning here. It really didn't get better until college when I was very far away, and they didn't
nice
give them
safe.
The access to my grades. Yeah.
Well, there was a time when the report cards got mailed, and fortunately, both my parents worked, and the school was about 40 feet from my house, and I knew exactly when the mail got there. And I was better at intercepting this than the Allied forces were deciphering the German code in World War II.
Damn you old.
All right. Excuse me. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Oh, by the way, tomorrow at Tap and Growler, they're having the inaugural Bourbon Street, a Mardi Gras celebration. Hey, Marty! And it's going to run tomorrow through the 16th. And they're going to be putting on the Ritz. They're going to feature 4 days of Louisiana-style food specials, Bourbon Street cocktails, specialty drafts, live music. The food to look for this year, sausage and chicken, gumbo, shrimp po' boys, some French Quarter stuff, and bourbon barrel-aged beers and ciders on the draft list. And music, 7 o'clock every night, starting tomorrow. Tap and Growler, 5th and Pearl, downtown Eugene. All ages are welcome until 9 p.m. every night. There is no charge to get into this event online, tapandgrowler.com. The Tap and Growler, stay or growl. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. Since it's Wednesday, we're going to wrap up Crunch Time by paying homage to the bell. The Crunch Exchange is next. 95.3 The Score.
Hear ye, hear ye. All rise and respect thy bell. It is the Crunch Exchange. It's how we wrap up Crunch Time on a Wednesday. I bring up a prospectus from the world of sports. Steve then tells us if he's buying, selling, or the often used pending option. We begin on February 8th when Mel Tucker tweeted the following. While I am flattered to be considered for the head coach job at Michigan State, I am committed to the CU Buffs football for hashtag the build of our program. It's great athletes, coaches, and supporters. Hashtag unfinished business. Hashtag go Buffs. Hashtag we are relentless. Sorry, we are hashtag relentless. Hashtag culture. Hashtag the build. Well, Not anymore. Mel Tucker is on his way to Michigan State, just like he said he wasn't going to be less than 3 days later. And Colorado fans are big mad online. Not only was Tucker tweeting about staying at Colorado, he was on the radio and speaking to the media about staying with the Buffs, too. And for some reason, I'm getting flashbacks of, why wouldn't I be? I'm the football coach. I'm not addressing any of that rumor stuff. It's just rolling over and over and over again all inside my head. Colorado fans are pretty right to be upset that their coach is leaving after one season, even if it was just 5-7 and completing the 7th best class in the Pac-12, which is an incredible bummer for those kids that just committed to Colorado, and the fans were buying in. But enough about being mad about Tucker. Let's think about what Michigan State is doing here. Tucker is getting a huge payday. The Spartans are going to nearly double Tucker's pay from the $2.4 million he was making in Boulder to $5.7 to start over at Michigan State. Sure, being in the Big Ten, Michigan State gets a lot more money to throw around, but this seems like a lot. Tucker is getting $1 million for all 5 of his career wins. And I totally get an athletic department thinking when they found their guy, they need to pay him so that he can leave to make sure the move is worth it. But is it really necessary to double what Tucker is making? $1.4 million more than Michigan State was just playing Mark D'Antonio. And while it's really early, I don't think that Mel Tucker is going to be a Mark D'Antonio. The prospectus, Michigan State are right to pay Mel Tucker double what Colorado was paying him.
I say no. I think there's a chemical imbalance here that doesn't make any sense and reeks of desperation.
Baseball needs change. The target audience is getting older and older and older, and even getting to the point where it's making Steve look young. Rob Manfred is trying to make some change to the point to make the game more fun and interest a younger demographic. That's really the goal of the proposed changes to the playoff format that leaked this week. To me, a young person who is sick of all sports sticking to their traditions for the sake of tradition, this is great. More teams making the playoffs means that more teams would feel the need to make a playoff run. The tiebreakers for teams getting into this format all come down to regular season games, which means that they need more. And if you want the ultimate made-for-TV event, you have a team picking the other team they get to play. Talk about a moment that'll drive people to their TVs in October to talk about baseball. The Twitter debates would be insane. The jobs that are put in the line for front office people if they make the wrong decision picking their playoff team, so maybe more teams will try and move the... It's all insanity, and I need it. I need this drama. I don't even care if the DH comes to the National League now, and if that's the case, make the playoffs the best 14 teams, and to hell with your divisions, to hell with your leagues. Let's make some changes and have some fun. Let's do it for the kids. The prospectus... Baseball needs to implement their proposed postseason changes.
I think they are slipping, 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 like Steve Miller sang, into the past, not the future. And anything that could garner attention from the younger demo is absolutely needed. I would absolutely roll the dice here.
We're still a month away from NFL free agency beginning, but the rumors are starting to go wild. Teams are announcing that they're parting ways with players, players are having meetings with teams, and teams are leaking out rumors of contracts they would offer to a player that they don't want to sign, but they want to look like they're trying. Sure, Brady is the biggest fish in that market lurking in the free agency waters. We know Phillip Rivers is going to end up somewhere new, but the most mysterious name out there, one that we're not quite sure if it even exists, the Kraken of the market, if you will, is Cam Newton. The 6'5", 30-year-old quarterback has been bitten hard by the injury bug after a dominant 7 seasons with the Panthers. In 2018, he had a nagging shoulder injury that ended his season 2 weeks early, and he thought he would heal by the time 2019 came around, but he injured his foot in week 3 and only played in 2 games. We all remember that was because of the sports talk curse that cost him last year. That was your fault, Steve. Newton's cap hit is $21.2 million next year, but $19 million of that leaves the Panthers if he's traded or cut. If he's healthy, he can be a total game changer and a guy that can really help a team win. That'd be a huge boost to Carolina, but they kind of want to start over and reload with some picks. Picks that they're going to need since they're also losing Greg Olsen to free agency and Luke Kuechly to retirement. The prospectus, Cam Newton will be traded out of Carolina.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to play for them, but he's not a free agent? Is that what you're trying to say?
He still has 1 year left on his contract, so they can just outright cut him, or they can try and work a deal for him, or try and keep him there. I don't know. They got a new head coach. Everything is up in the air.
So does it have to be a trade, or could I say that I don't think he's going to quarterback Carolina anymore?
Well, my prospectus is that he will be traded out of Carolina, so if you're not buying the trade, then you would have to sell.
Yeah, I think he's more likely to just get cut and then move on, so I'm going to sell that.
Yeah, it's very murky. That's why I called him the Kraken. We're not sure if it's real or not.
Well, the bottom line is that he could actually end up quarterbacking there, and I would be right in your question because they didn't trade him.
Right, but then if they trade him, you're wrong. Oh, okay,
I see where you're going.
There's layers to this.
Go ahead.
Cam Newton was once a player that was thought of as a guy who was going to change the position of quarterback. He was as big as the linebackers trying to tackle him, and he was just as fast, if not faster, than all of them. Plus, he had a rocket for an arm. Not long after, Lamar Jackson has come around and looking like he's going to change the position, being a dual-threat quarterback that adds so much balance to an offense. Defenses can't win. Speed options to the outside. RPOs that confuse linebackers. A big enough arm to always keep the threat of pass in play. He's great. It's why he was the MVP. It's the kind of thing that Sean Payton allegedly wants to run with Taysom Hill in New Orleans. With the future of Drew Brees up in the air, NFL experts are looking to Taysom as a guy who's going to be Lamar in New Orleans. He's already a guy that comes in and runs the ball a whole lot with that threat of a passing game despite just having 13 career pass attempts. Yeah, right. The same Taysom Hill that attempted one pass for weeks 2 through 8 when Drew Brees was out and Payton had the chance to try out this offense he allegedly really wants to run. Taysom Hill is the future in New Orleans. Why would Teddy Bridgewater be making $7.35 million to not start the prospectus? Taysom Hill is not the answer at quarterback in New Orleans.
That might be the easiest question ever asked during the Crunch Exchange. He ain't. He ain't the answer.
Is that equal? More money.
13 career passes. I don't think we really need to say all that much more.
No.
Brees does that on the first two drives of the game, and usually one of them is for a touchdown. He's a gimmick guy. Are they out of their mind?
This is an actual thing that's been debated.
I know,
on
I've
Twitter.
Heard it. I just refuse to engage in the debate because it's actually borderline idiotic.
I know, but then there's real life football people that are like, this is a thing that's going to work. Watch Sean Payton run this offense. He's going to make it better. And I just think they're idiots. I really just don't think like Taysom Hill is that guy.
All right, before we take a break, a quick shout-out. The folks here at 95.3 The Score were presenting the world's largest indoor garage sale the end of March 28th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's going to be at the Lane County Fairgrounds, so whether it's spring cleaning time or just get rid of some stuff, you can grab your spot now. Booth space starts at $65, gets you a 10-foot by 10-foot spot. Just contact our front desk and reserve your space. The day of the show, admission's just $2. It's the world's largest indoor garage sale, March 28th, at the Lane County Fairgrounds. Courtesy of your friends here at 95.3 The Score. All right, looking ahead to Sports Talk, at the bottom of the 4 o'clock hour, we'll talk many things Ducks with our pal Joey Mack. So that's coming your way, 95.3 The Score.
What are we talking about, Skip?